Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Hello, Women of Strength. We have our friend Brittany today with us sharing her HBAC, which if you have not been with us very long or are still unsure about all the crazy terms in the VBAC world, HBAC is home birth after cesarean, but she has had a home birth after two cesareans, so HBA 2C, so kind of similar to like what I am, a VBAC, but I was in a birth center, not a home. So I'm so excited to share Brittany's, well, I'm not going to be sharing it, she's sharing it today. So welcome, Brittany. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get to share my story.
Absolutely. Me too. Well, we'll get right into that. I'm just going to do a quick review and then we'll do our intro and dive right in. This review is by Brianna Moody, and this was left in 2023, and it says, so binge-worthy. Okay, seriously, I could not agree already with her because I feel like this is the type of podcast that when you're looking for your options for birth after cesarean, it's like you just want to hear every story. And I get into those like binges, especially with podcasts. So I could not agree more. I believe that this podcast is binge worthy. It says, I found the VBAC Link podcast in my second trimester after my midwife suggested that I start listening to positive stories to get in a good headspace as I prepared for my VBAC. Okay, I also love that her midwife is suggesting that. 100% agree on that as well. Says, what I didn't expect was to hear so many different types of birth experiences in one place. I was floored by the amount of information in each episode, by how much these stories impacted me. I found that I loved listening to all of the different stories, even the CBAC stories. Honestly, I think those helped me process some of my fear about potentially having a CBAC. Okay, CBAC, cesarean birth after cesarean. Just want to make sure we know what that means. Says, and viewing this as something that could still be beautiful and empowering. I tell everyone I know about the podcast, even first-time moms, because there is truly something that could benefit every birthing mama on here. I am so happy to say that I had my VBAC baby in January. Ah, it's so amazing. Congratulations, Brianna Moody. Says, and okay, sorry, in January, and it was the most beautiful experience. I still cannot believe I really did it. I took so many things from the podcast that helped make it possible. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and passion for VBAC with the world. Okay, I'm obsessed with this review. So many amazing things right here. Yes, binge the podcast. You're going to learn so many incredible things, like so many. Every story, just like she said, has its similarities, but also it's very different. And that's something that I love about birth. And then I love she pointed out that CBAC could even be viewed as beautiful and empowering. I love that because I want you to know, women of strength, VBAC doesn't have to be the right answer. If it's not feeling right for you, that's okay. You can go and have a cesarean birth and it can be absolutely beautiful. So know that it's an option to do both, and you could still have a beautiful, empowering experience on both. Okay. All right. I'm going to let you guys go. We're going to get to the intro and then we're going to dive into Brittany's HBAC after two cesareans.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, Brittany, long intro. It's time for you to share with us your beautiful stories.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to give you a little bit, I'm going to kind of start at the beginning, a little bit of a brief overview of my history and kind of what led me to pursuing an HVAC after two C-sections. In 2019, I had my first pregnancy and I was actually pregnant with twins. So that was a big, exciting thing for us, very unexpected. And overall, I had a pretty normal pregnancy. I didn't really have a whole lot of issues until at the end, my blood pressure kind of started to creep up here and there. And then at 33 weeks, I went in for an appointment and I was diagnosed with preeclampsia. So that was very overwhelming. I did not have a lot of knowledge about birth really in general. I was kind of one of those that went in and just kind of trusted everything my OB said, just rolled with it. And they looked at us and they said, we need to admit you, you know, your blood pressure is too high, you have protein in your urine. And so my husband and I, you know, went over to the hospital immediately following and realized that we were going to be staying there for a little bit. And so they were able to manage my blood pressure for about a week. And then I needed to deliver the twins at about 34 and one. So it was actually July 5th. So it was right at the 4th of July. And it was hard. It was definitely a hard, all of a sudden transition that we weren't expecting. We were thrown into the hospital. My husband had to come out of work and things just continued to get worse. So at 34 and one, we did another ultrasound and both were breached like they had been the entire pregnancy. And so we really were not given any options besides a scheduled C-section. I didn't really think twice about that. I just thought, okay, this is what you do. We have breached babies. We need to do it. And so at 34 and one on July 5th, I went in for my scheduled C-section and I had the twins, and obviously being born early, they were taken to the NICU. So it was a very abnormal experience in the sense that I had these babies. My body knew I had just had babies, but the babies were taken from, you know, essentially taken from me. And I had to go back on magnesium for my blood pressure post C-section. So I actually did not even get to see my babies, hold my babies, touch my babies until about 36 hours later. So just a very abnormal experience, especially for a first time mom. I got wheeled to recovery and they're like, here's a breast pump. You need to start pumping, you know, all of these things that I just wasn't prepared for. I had never done before. It was such a new experience. And so thankfully they were only in the NICU for 10 days, but as you can imagine, recovering from a C-section, traveling back and forth to the hospital, trying to figure out like pumping, how often to pump. It was just a lot. It was a lot. And it was just very unnatural, right? It's just not a natural experience to be separated from your baby or your babies after they're born. But we made it and we got through that trial. And we were very, very, very lucky that they got to come home together 10 days after being born. So
wow,
that was
10
just
days?
Yes, a miracle
that
within itself.
Very fast. Yeah, that's great.
It was very fast. Yes, they did really great. They were just kind of considered those eaters and growers. They didn't really have any major issues. My son was on CPAP for like maybe 48 hours. But after that, they were just learning to eat and to grow, and they got to come home together, which is also very rare for twins. Yes.
That's awesome.
So yes, we were very thankful for that. So following that pregnancy, we got pregnant again unexpectedly when the twins were only 9 months old. So as you can imagine, that was a lot. That was in 2020, and it was right in the thick of COVID. So things were different. Things were crazy. You know, they weren't even really, at least at the practice I was at, allowing women to come in for appointments until second trimester, you know, just all of these different things. And so it was a lot. It was a lot to process that I was pregnant again. It was a lot to I was wondering if I was pregnant with twins again. You know, there was so many questions that I had, and I just was not getting any answers or any support during that beginning period. And so at about 13-ish weeks, they finally allowed me to come in person and be seen in person. And we were pregnant with just one, which we were thankful for. Would have been a lot to have twins back to back. But I didn't have a significant amount more of knowledge at this time. I knew a little bit more about birth. I knew that I didn't want to have another C-section. I knew that there was something called a VBAC. I was hoping to be able to do that. I didn't want to have to go the same route, but I really didn't have much education. And so we kind of just went with the flow. We were at a smaller hospital closer to us this go round. And looking back, I would 100% say that my provider was VBAC tolerant, not VBAC supportive. I don't think that I could identify that at the time, just not having the knowledge and the resources. But definitely now, I can tell you that they were very just VBAC tolerant.
So
I kept getting
now
answers
looking back,
like,
sorry to interrupt you. Now looking back, you may
no,
have
go
been
ahead.
going into this. I was going to say, at the time you weren't able to identify, which is very, very, very common. Now looking back, what were like maybe some of those very first signs? Is that what you were going into?
Yes, absolutely. So we kept having conversations about, is this, or can I have a VBAC? Can I, do I have to have another C-section? It was like, we'll see. When we get closer, we'll see. We don't want to risk anything. It was a lot of the nonchalant, like, I'm going to beat around the bush, but really, I'm probably going to pull the rug out from you underneath of you in the end. And there were a couple appointments I left really discouraged, even with tears, like, I feel like this isn't going to happen. I don't understand. But again, I just didn't have that knowledge to be able to really even question what they were saying. I just assumed, like, if this isn't going to work out, it's not going to work out because it's not safe or, X, Y, and Z reason. And so my pregnancy went on. And of course, I always had in the back of my mind, like, the concern for preeclampsia again, because I had it with the twins. But I had no blood pressure issues. I had no issues that pregnancy. Obviously, carrying a singleton compared to twins is very different. And so we got towards the end. And at about 38 weeks, they started talking about wanting to induce me. And I was like, why are we doing this? But again, I just didn't have the knowledge to really question their reasoning behind it. And so they had actually scheduled me for an induction at 39 weeks. And my husband and I left that appointment, and we knew enough to know that we didn't feel good about it. We were like, this just doesn't feel right. Like, something feels off about this. Why are we rushing this? And so when the time came, we actually canceled that induction and didn't show up. And so we went to just another regular appointment that following week, and I was getting ready to go into my 40th week. And they were okay with the fact that I, not done the induction, but they were really, really pressing an induction for 40 weeks, which was like a couple days after.
Which is
And
also
so
another red
we
flag.
finally just, yes, very much so. Again, something I couldn't identify at the time, besides the fact that I felt insecure about it. So we decided to do the 40-week induction. And when we got there, we were going to start with like a Foley bulb, but it ended up that I was already 3 centimeters dilated. My body had made some good progress. I was already effaced. And so they jumped right to the Pitocin induction. And because this was in the thick of COVID, there were no doulas allowed. I did have a discussion with my husband about potentially hiring a doula. Like, I knew of doulas. I was like, I think this would probably be good for trying to have a VBAC. But that was not an option. You had one support person allowed. That was it. My mom couldn't be there. Nobody could be there. No doulas could be there. It was just a really, really hard time in the hospital system. And so we did the best we could to kind of prepare for what was to come, but just did not have the education or the support that we needed going into the situation we were going into. And to make a very long story short, It was intervention after intervention after intervention after intervention. It was basically the definition of like the cascade of interventions from Pitocin to epidurals to just everything in between. Thankfully, I did by morning. The induction started about 6 p.m. and by 9 a.m. they were like, oh, we're having a baby. This is going to be before lunch. I was almost 10 centimeters dilated. And so we were really excited about that. And we got to the pushing phase and things just didn't move. I mean, nothing. I was making very little progress. And now, knowing and having the knowledge that I have now, I look back and realize there was very much a disconnect, I think, happening with my mind and body, which I've seen happen in some other women sometimes when having epidurals. And I pushed for total about 5 hours. We did have some breaks in
Wow.
between. Yes, they there was actually not an OB on the floor, so it was with a nurse. She left to go home, and there was the one that I was going to have was in the office. And so they basically just let me keep at it. And the nurse did try. I will give her credit in that she tried to get me into some different positions, but we just could not make any progress with her. And we did know when my water broke that there was some meconium in my fluid. So we knew that that was there and that we needed to be aware of it. But after about 5 hours, we were exhausted. It was like, what is going on? We need to make some decisions. Why can't we get an OB over here? So finally the OB, I guess, had finished her shift, across the way in the office and made her way over. And at that point it was about 6 p.m. So it had been a very, very long afternoon. And she came in and she did an assessment and she said, there is a lot of meconium. So we need to make a decision. We either need to get this baby out with a vacuum, or we need to go back for a C-section. And so I was like, well, what's a vacuum? We had no knowledge of what that was, what the pros or the cons were. And so they literally brought in a pamphlet and they were like, here's a pamphlet to read, about it.
They didn't
And
just
I
like
was
tell
like,
you all the pros and cons and right there.
no,
They didn't, what? They
no.
gave you a pamphlet after 5 hours of pushing and being
Yes.
exhausted.
Yes, they
I'm
literally
sorry,
gave
but
one
that
to
is
us and
silly.
it's terrible. Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, because I was in no headspace. I was just beyond exhausted. She said, I'm going to give you about 30 minutes and we're going to prep the OR. When I come back, you let me know what you want to do and we can try the vacuum or we can go back for a C-section. And so I was like, okay, and so my husband and I are talking through this. And had really had no idea what to do because, like, reading a pamphlet in that time and place is
No,
just
no.
not okay and not adequate. And so she came back in and she gave me another assessment. And she said, okay, I'm really sorry, but we need to go back for a C-section right now. The meconium is very thick. This is becoming very problematic. So she took the vacuum option off the table and said, we need to go and we need to go now. So we went back for what I would consider more of just like an urgent C-section, not an emergency C-section. And it was an experience. I, about halfway through, started to feel what I felt like was way too much. And so they actually did end up putting me to sleep,
Oh.
fully after she was born. But
After she
she
was
came
born.
out and she actually, after she was born. So, like, when she was born, she didn't cry. I panicked about that. And my husband was like, it's okay. It's okay. And we found out that, she did have a lot of meconium and she did need to be resuscitated. She actually had an Apgar score of 2, which was much, much less
Wow.
than my twins who were born at 34 weeks. And so thankfully, they got that addressed very quickly. And by that 5 minute mark with the second Apgar score, she was back up to like an 8. But at that point, I had told them, like, I am feeling too much with whatever you're doing to sew me back up. Like, I started to really panic. My pain level was very high. And so I saw her briefly, and then they took her to the NICU, and then they actually ended up just putting me like to sleep because I woke up back in recovery following. And she was a 9 pound 2 ounce baby, which they very much threw the label of like big baby. This is, you know, this is why you couldn't push her out, you know, think she was stuck, things of that nature. And so she was sent to the NICU again. This is now my third NICU baby. This is my third baby that I haven't like held or touched, you know, post-delivery. Just a weird, weird experience. And so this C-section, which was much, much more challenging for me than my first. Obviously, I had labored down for many of hours, you know, I had pushed for many of hours and then went into a C-section, which makes a huge difference. But I also had an infection post-birth, which one of the OBs said was probably from the numerous amount of cervical checks that they gave me after my water broke. And so I just had a really, really hard time. I went into postpartum already struggling. I mean, struggling before I had even left the hospital. Thankfully, our little girl only had to stay in the NICU one night. She was able to be with me the second night and then was able to come home with us. But still, just a very, you know, unnormal situation where you wake up from the surgery, you've just had a baby, your hormones are all over the place, but your baby's not there, you're in pain. Just a very unnatural situation. And so I really went into postpartum already a few steps behind. I just was really struggling physically. I dealt with a lot more pain this go round, and mentally I struggled a lot emotionally. I didn't know it until later on, but I really believe that it's healthy to like grieve a birth that doesn't go the way that you had maybe envisioned or planned, and that that's such a healthy thing to do. It felt so silly to me at the time. You're like, okay, my baby's healthy, my baby's here. Like, why can't I get this together? You know, but really it's so much more than that. And I know so many people will say, you know, but we have a healthy baby, which is what you want, right? And which is so great. It is not the only thing that matters though.
No.
And I think so many women don't realize that, you know, like people mean so well, family and friends come in and they're like, oh, but thank God the baby's okay. Yes, of course, thank God the baby's okay. But it's not the only thing that matters, right? And so You essentially have a grieving mom in the thick of postpartum who also just had a major surgery. And so it was a lot. It was a lot. It was honestly a really miserable postpartum recovery for me. And I also had twins that were, what, I think 17 months old. So like it was a lot. And so at my 6-week visit, the OB who did my C-section said, okay, that's it. It will be C-sections from here on out. You know, VBAC is off the table. You just need to know that. And so I left that appointment and I actually remember texting my cousin just about it. And I was like, okay, you know, I guess that makes sense, right? Like I've had 2 C-sections. And then weeks following, I just was more and more unsettled with that. I really was grieving the whole situation. I was grieving the fact that I'd had 3 babies and somehow hadn't gotten to hold one of them, you know, after delivery. It was all of these emotions that I was trying to process. And through that, I became very obsessed with birth. Like, I need to understand, I need to know, I need to educate myself, and I want to know as best I can, what happened in Lila's birth? Like, how did we end up here? And so I really began to educate myself. I delved into all the things. And a few months later, I really felt the Lord calling me to pursue becoming a doula. And I mean, we had 3 kids under 2 years old. And so it was crazy to think about taking anything else on. But I remember it was that following July, I went to my husband and I was like, listen, I know this is crazy. I know we have so much on our plate, but I really, really feel like the Lord is just calling me to pursue becoming a doula so that I can help educate and empower other women and hopefully help them avoid being in the same situation that I was. And he, being the man that he is, was like, I think you would be great. You know, he was like, I'm totally supportive. I'm totally on board. And so then that kind of started my journey of becoming a doula. And it was about a year where I went through my program. I worked with those first initial moms. I did all those things. And I really, really loved it. Then I found out I was pregnant again. And that was January of 2022. And I knew for sure I needed and wanted a different situation. I could not walk through the same scenario that I walked through, especially with my second daughter. And I wanted things to be different. And I really had had home birth on my heart. And where I live, I live near Charlotte, North Carolina. There is actually only one hospital that will even allow you to pursue a VBAC after two C-sections.
Really?
All the other hospitals, yes, all the other hospitals will not. And so I started to pursue home birth, but then also thought maybe I'll do co-care because that way I have something lined up if something does go wrong, blah, blah, blah. So I tried to get into that hospital, their OB/GYNs, and at all three of their locations, they were not accepting new patients. And so initially, I was very discouraged. I remember that day crying, texting my husband, like, what are we going to do? Like, this is the only hospital that will even allow this, that'll even potentially let me come in and try. And he very simply said, the Lord closed that door. So we're to just to not to do co-care. Let's just focus on home birth. That's where your heart has been. And at the time that overwhelmed me, but it in the end, looking back, it was one of the best decisions. And I'm so thankful for it. And I do believe there is a time and place for co-care for certain women, absolutely, who want to do home birth, but want to have that co-care piece. But for me, looking back, I think co-care would have destroyed me mentally, just with all of the appointments, all of this, the extra things being said, even though I knew and had that VBAC knowledge. It's hard when you're constantly getting little bugs in your ear of you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, or we need to induce or things like that. So in the end, I was very thankful for that. And I simply pursued home birth and I interviewed a lot of midwives. And I ended up with, I'm very biased, but just who I think is just the best midwife ever. She's really, really awesome and received just such amazing prenatal care. Like my visits were like an hour long. It was very proactive care, trying to stay ahead of things that could come up just with nutrition and supplements and things like that. And so I hired my team, my midwife. I hired a doula because I told my husband, I said, I know I am a doula, but I also know what happens when you're in labor. And I said, everything kind of goes out the window and you go to labor land. And I said, I want somebody there who I know can be my brain and can help me with all the things when I can't think straight. And he was super supportive of that. And I hired a really awesome doula.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
And so once I had my team in place, I felt really, really good about it moving forward. My husband was so extremely supportive. He's one of those where, like, I feel like anybody who's a doula, like their husband is just like extra educated in birth. Like, I feel like he has to listen to all my stuff all the time. But he was so supportive. And at that point, I had a really pretty much standard pregnancy. The biggest things that I did were to continue, I use the VBAC link a lot, right? Just to, whenever that doubt creeps into your mind of like, am I making the right choice? Like, is VBAC after two C-sections really safe? Like, I would go back to some of those resources that you guys put out, right? That knowledge I had, but like, just needed to read through again, just needed to give myself that sense of peace about the decision I made again. I listened to every VBAC after multiple C-section podcast that you had. Really tried to focus on just those positive birth stories. And the biggest thing I did was I really made the effort to protect my mental health, meaning we kept it very private. The decision we made, we kept very, very private from family and friends, which was hard, right? Because everybody, especially after my last experience, was like, where are you giving birth? What is the plan? Because they know how disastrous it went. But I knew that I didn't need opinions of everybody's, right? I didn't have time to, or the energy to like educate everybody around me in the decision that I had made. My husband, myself, our birth team, we were confident in, the decision I had made and moving forward. And so we just kept it very private. My best friend and my sister-in-law knew, and they were kind of my support throughout. And then once we got towards the end and I reached that full term mark of 37 weeks, we did tell all of our parents because we wanted just our parents to know. And my mom was going to be there and his mom was going to come at some point. So thankfully, our family was very supportive. My mom used to be a labor and delivery nurse, so she had a lot of questions, but my midwife sat down with her and let her ask all of them. So our family was on board, but I really just made the point to protect my mental health and only view and read things that were positive and only talk to people that I know were going to be encouraging and be positive about it. And that was truly one of the best decisions I made throughout my pregnancy. And so fast forward, we get to 39 weeks and 4 days, and I thought for sure that I was going to go over 40. That doula mindset, I was like, I always tell my clients, prepare to go over 40 weeks so that mentally you're not distraught when 40 weeks comes, you know? So, oh man, I was like, it's going to be over 40. I was so secure in that, that like when it happened, I was like, not ready almost. Like I was a little overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, I'm not 40 weeks yet though. So I'm 39 and 4. We had actually went with some friends out that morning. We took our kids somewhere and my mom was there. And I remember my mom putting us back in the car and she got like all emotional and she was like, I just feel like it's going to be so soon. And I was so frustrated. I remember because I was like, no, mom, like I'm not 40 weeks. Like it's fine. She's like, call me as soon as something happens. And I'm like, mom, we have time. Little did I know I was going to have a baby that night. But later that afternoon, I decided I got this overwhelming feeling of like, I need to go to Costco. I need to stock up. And my best friend was like, you're crazy to go to Costco on a Saturday. That is going to put you into labor. And sure enough, that is exactly what it did. And so I went to Costco, got everything we needed, ran to Target, and my first contraction started. And I had had Braxton Hicks most of my third trimester. And so I was very aware this was different as soon as it happened. But again, that doula mind, I was like, this could be nothing. I'm just going to ignore it. We're going to continue on. And so they kept coming as I finished my shopping about every 10 to 15 minutes apart. And so when I left, I decided to text my husband and just say, hey, this could be nothing, but just so you know, I've had some contractions. They're about 10 to 15 minutes apart. We'll see what happens. And they had started at 6 p.m. when I was out. So I finished up getting what I needed, came home. My girls were already asleep on the couch, so my husband put them to bed. We ate dinner. My son hung out with us for a little bit. And things continued to pick up. Like I was like, okay, so this is definitely, I think, happening. So about 7 o'clock, I alerted my midwife just to let her know, hey, probably gonna be a long night, but I'm definitely having contractions. Let my doula know, our photographer, got everybody in the loop. And so after I ate, I was like, I'm gonna get in the bath, some Epsom salt, try and relax, see if I can relax these contractions enough to maybe get some rest before. Because in my mind, I was like, this is going to be an all night thing. Let's see if I can get some sleep. But that is not what happened. I got in the bath for maybe 10 minutes, had a few contractions, and was like, I cannot sit like this. This is not comfortable. I called my mom and I was like, hey, I'm having contractions. Don't worry about coming over yet, though. We still got plenty of time. And thankfully, she ignored me because she was about 50 minutes away at the time. She ignored me and she just got in her car and came over anyways, which was a huge blessing because things continued to pick up really quickly. So my husband was continuing to set our room up, get the birth pool up, but also try to support me through contractions. And thankfully, all of our kiddos at this point were asleep upstairs, which is something we had just prayed about because I wanted them close by. But I also knew that I just needed my space, especially with them being so young. So that was such a blessing. They were all asleep. It was just me and my husband. And so around like 9 p.m. ish, my mom thankfully arrived which was a blessing because moments before I was like, okay, you need to tell my mom to come because things are just moving really, really quickly. And so I particularly found a lot of relief in one position, and that is the position I wanted to stay in. I was on all fours on the ground, rocking back and forth on my yoga ball. And everybody had, hey, you want to try this? You want to try this? And I was like, nope, this is what's working for me. I just want to continue doing this. And so that's what I did for a long while. And shortly after my mom got there, we called my doula to tell her to go ahead and come because she was about 50, 45, 50 minutes away as well. And so with that phone call, she was able to tell because I had prior talked to her as well, but things had definitely picked up. We were definitely probably in full-blown active labor. And so she had told my husband, go ahead and start filling the birth pool because anybody who's had a birth pool knows that can take some time. So he went ahead and he started to fill the birth pool. Well, my mom just stayed by me, helped supported me, and my doula, left and was on her way. Shortly after that, my water broke. A lot of pressure. Then my water broke. And I remember being so panicked, telling my mom, please check for meconium, because I just kept thinking about Lila and the situation that I'd had with my prior daughter. And I said, check for meconium, check for meconium. And she looked and everything looked fine. And following my water breaking, I moved right into transition. So it was game on at that point. My husband called my midwife. He said, okay, we definitely need you to leave and come. And thankfully, he had gotten the pool already. So the pool was ready, warm water was in. And so I was able to get in. And that was about 10:45 p.m. ish. And so I was able to labor through transition in the water, which was a huge blessing. I'm one of those who like loves to be in the water, loves the bath, find it very relaxing. But I remember at this point telling my mom, like, I feel like I'm getting no breaks. And I still, at the time, did not know I was in transition. Looking back, I was very easily able to identify the phases. But when you're in it, even having that knowledge, you're like, no, there's no way. Like, this is going to go all night. How am I going to do this? I'm not getting any breaks. But I had so much great support. And my doula arrived not long after I'd gotten in the pool. And she was doing some counter pressure and giving my husband some things he could do to help. I held a lot of tension in my face, so giving him some suggestions of things he could do. And then, not long after getting in the pool, that fetal ejection reflex definitely kicked in. I had heard, obviously, people talk about it. I had studied it in my work with becoming a doula. But until you really experience it, you're like, wow, this is like, no joke, and people are like, how am I going to know when to push? Oh, you will know, your body goes, is going to do it whether or not you want it. And that is exactly what happened. I started to feel it. I mean, it was like my body was doing these little pushes without me even doing anything. And so soon after I started to really lean into that and really started to continue with that pushing. And I remember feeling such relief when I got to the pushing phase, because although it was very challenging, it was like kind of giving me that purpose through contractions, like something I could focus on. Like, and I actually got a little bit of relief when I was, doing some of the pushing. So I remember being really thankful for that. My photographer arrived, my mother-in-law arrived during that time, and my midwife team got there at about 11:15. I had already started pushing a little bit, but I remember, although yes, it's challenging to not have an epidural. And it was also so amazing because having had the experience of Lila, where I had pushed for 5 hours and they were like, well, she's not moving. She's in a bad position. She's stuck. I could feel nothing. I could feel everything. Like, I could feel the progress of my baby being moved down frequently during pushes. I could feel her in the birth canal. Like, I could almost feel the progress I was making at different times with her, which was so motivating and so helpful for me. And so that was just such a night and day experience from, my prior experience pushing with Lila. And then after about an hour and 15 minutes, give or take a little bit, my daughter Charlie made her way into the world. It was about 12:25 a.m. and it was a beautiful Beautiful, beautiful experience. She was born in the water. Literally, my overwhelm of emotions following was like nothing I could ever really articulate in words. The oxytocin was like on full blast. I was like on this birth high. And having had prior C-sections, one of the downfalls of a C-section is you're just on so much medication and so many pain meds that I always felt like when I came out, I was in like a haze. Like I didn't really know where I was, things like that. So to be so present and to literally feel my hormones just like doing what they were designed to do was like such an overwhelming experience. I remember talking to my husband about that days later, and I was like, it was just such a high, like after she was born. This was obviously my first experience getting to, hold a baby post-birth. So that was very emotional for me, getting to pull her up to me and have her right there and just be able to hold her. And my husband was there, and the people that, we loved most were just surrounding us. It was just a very, very beautiful, overwhelmingly just positive experience. And then one of the benefits of home birth is that, you get to move from the pool or wherever you gave birth to like get comfortable in your bed. And so that was just awesome. And I remember when they got me comfortable in my bed, I was looking at my birth, like I affirmations wall that I had a bunch of stuff hanging up right by the pool. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, thank God that's done. That was the hardest thing I've ever done. And then like a minute later, I was like, I feel like I'm gonna have to do this again. I was so overwhelmed with just the experience and the emotions. And so my husband and I, we got to lay in bed, we got to just cuddle our girl and, pray over her. And everybody was so great. They were cleaning everything up. My mother-in-law was like making food for everybody. It was just such a beautiful experience. And then about an hour into it, we decided to do just her newborn checks, have the midwife look her over, weigh her, and all that good stuff. And we knew she was big. Like there was no denying it when she came out, but never once did I look at her and be like, gosh, she's a giant baby. She's so much bigger than Lila or anything like that. But we weighed her and everybody made their guesses. And then she ended up being 10 pounds, 10 ounces, and 22 inches long. So the 9 pound, 2 ounce baby that they said, I could never push out, that I could never have had her vaginally, I ended up going on to have a 10 pound, 10 ounce baby girl. And she also was born, she had a nuchal hand. So her hand was up on her at her face when she was born, which can make things a little bit more challenging. But I delivered her and I had no tearing. Like it was just such an amazing, like redemptive story after being told, like, you never could have birthed this 9 pound baby. You're never going to have a vaginal birth. Like these doors are closed for you. Really, the exact opposite happened. And I went on to have a much larger baby. And she was great. She was healthy and had no issues. And my children were just thrilled the next morning to wake up and come and meet her. And to this day, like they will still bring it up. Just, do you remember when Gigi brought us downstairs and we had a new baby? And it was just such a beautiful, redeeming story for all of us and for my husband included. Like, I think sometimes we forget how much of an emotional experience it can be for the dads, and especially to see their wives go through so much. And so it was just so healing for both of us. And it was just such a beautiful experience. I feel like I could go on and on about it. I mean, I had the best postpartum care. For those that aren't familiar, with a home birth, your midwife comes to see you multiple times. So mine came to see me six times. She came in 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, 1 week, 2 weeks, So she was constantly there checking on me, checking on my baby girl. And it was just care like no other. All I had known was I had major abdominal surgery. And then 6 weeks later, they brought me in. They're like, you're cleared for everything. And it was so overwhelming. And this go round, I had somebody who's like, how are you doing mentally? How are your emotions? How are things healing? How is your nutrition? Like, are you resting? all of these things that are so, so important for postpartum. And I think so many women don't even realize like these things that what postpartum should really look like. And so I will forever be thankful for that care as well. That was just unlike anything I had prior experienced, obviously, as well. So yeah, I mean, overall, it was such a beautiful experience. I'm so thankful for how it played out. The Lord had answered so many of our prayers just throughout. And I'm just so thankful, so, so thankful to my midwife who believed in me and in my body's ability to birth my baby, no matter the size, you know, and just, you know, that team of people that I had, I will forever be grateful.
Are you willing to share your midwife for those in your area that might be feeling restricted because of the lack of support in your area?
Yeah. So I will say, so I had a certified professional midwife. I live in North Carolina. So I live outside the Charlotte area in Monroe. We are very lucky. We have such a fantastic group of midwives in the Charlotte area of certified professional midwives. There are truly multiple great midwives. My midwife's name was Brooke. She is just, I don't know, the best of the best. She's a dear friend of mine. I've been really lucky to be able to, as a doula, get to work with some of her clients and still see her at births and things following. But if you are in the Charlotte area and you are considering home birth, things can be a little bit hairy just because we do have some restrictions in regards to certified nurse midwives compared to certified professional midwives. But feel free. I think in the show notes, my information will be there. I would be so, so happy to just help guide anybody in this area and give you a list of names of some really, really great providers who support VBAC or VBAC after multiple cesareans. And just, you know, because it can be a hard thing to navigate, a hard world to navigate, whether you're in the hospital system or planning a home birth, it still can just be really hard to navigate if you don't know where to look. Yeah. So.
And can people find you somewhere if they have any questions they could write you to, like on your own doula page?
Yes. You can find me at Joyful Beginnings Doula Care. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram. I also have a website, Joyful Beginnings Doula Care. Please feel free. I love nothing more than helping just guide moms and finding that right support. And then also, obviously, I love working with VBAC moms as a doula, but you can find me there. Feel free to reach out. I love doing whatever I can to just help other women have more positive experiences, especially when it comes to VBAC, because that's really, really hard sometimes.
Absolutely. It is. It's hard and it's frustrating that it's hard. So it really takes a village to find the right support. And let me tell you, I've been like taking little notes along the journey of your story, and there's so many things. So one, you had a preterm cesarean. So that's a thing. And we don't even have time to go through all of these things. So while she was sharing, I was like, oh, we have a link for that. Oh, we have a blog for that.
Yeah.
There's so many blogs. So I've got all of it. I already sent it off to our amazing transcriber page, who will make sure that this is all in the show notes. But okay, preterm cesarean, then close duration between cesarean and her VBAC or her TOLAC, then it had been CBAC. Talking about red flags and finding a right provider, processing the birth, co-care. I wanted to explain for anyone who didn't know what co-care means. And I love that you pointed out to like the fact that like it's really, really great for some people and it's not great for others. And I think that if you're interested in co-care or if you're curious about it, you need to tap into you as an individual and the type of place that you're in, because co-care can be amazing and it can be tricky because of what Brittany said, where you can go and you can be getting this information from a hospital and then this information from your home birth midwife or your birth center midwife, and they're not the same. And they can pull your mind out of a very positive space and start putting a lot of doubt in question. So if you're going to do co-care, I think it's super important no matter what, but you really, really, really need to know your facts because it's going to be important and it will likely come into play where someone might say something and it's the opposite of what the other professional is saying. And so you need to know what the evidence is. Big baby. I'm going to include a blog about big baby if you're being told you had a big baby, or like Brittany, that you would never ever get a baby out of your pelvis because your babies are just far too large. It then has a whole pound plus bigger baby for her VBAC. Oh my gosh, what else? I love that you also talked about something that's so unique to home birth, in my opinion, and I just want to like touch on it really fast, and that is the care after. Here in the US, and I know that if you're listening, not listening from the US, it's very different outside of the US. But here in the US, it is very standard to have the type of care like what Brittany described, even with a cesarean, okay? Which is a very, like, it's an abdominal surgery. It's a pretty big deal to have surgery or to have a baby vaginally and to not be seen, called, asked, anything for 6 weeks. Okay. 6 weeks. Let me tell you how much can happen in 6 weeks. A lot. A lot can happen. And so I love the uniqueness that home birth does offer. And I love that you even felt that and that you saw it yourself. You saw the difference of 24 hours, 72 hours. You're getting those mental checks. You're getting, how are you sleeping? How are you eating? Where are we at? How are you feeling? What are you doing? We're getting those check-ins. It's so important. It is so important. And so, if you're birthing in a hospital and you're likely going to be in the traditional line of the 6 week follow-up, I highly suggest checking in with either or getting like a postpartum doula or getting someone with that's professional that can check in on you, a therapist even. If you've gone through therapy, like have a 72-hour checkup with your therapist after birth. And if that means you just talk and you're like, hey, all things are peachy, great. There's things that we need to do here in the US. Unfortunately, we have to take it upon ourselves to take care of our mental health because it's just not the way the standard care is. Okay. I'm gonna leave it at that, but I wanna know. I don't know. Brittany's like shaking her head. She's like, yeah. Do you have anything to add to that?
The only thing that I would add, just piggybacking off of that, is especially if you're a VBAC mom, take the time, do the research, reach out to a local doula who you know is VBAC supportive if you need the extra help doing this, but take the time to find a provider that is supportive and not tolerant, because your providers and your birth team, the people that you're allowing into your space, can truly make or break your experience.
Yes.
And I've witnessed it. I've experienced it, you know. So do your due diligence on the front end. And it is not always easy, especially navigating the hospital system. But there are people out there. A lot of local doulas do know of, hey, you know, I've had great experiences with this, you know, OBGYN when it comes to VBAC, or, you know, hey, stay away from this practice. But do your due diligence. Find a team that really believes in your body, your body's ability to birth your baby vaginally. Like, they need to believe in it as much as you do, and just take the time to educate yourself. You know, I believe that education is the key to empowerment. That's such a big piece of the work that I do with my moms leading up to birth, on both birth and postpartum. But take that time, educate yourself, find a team that believes as much as you do in your VBAC.
Yeah, I am just gonna leave it right there because I think that is just a nice way to just like zip it right up and complete this beautiful episode. Thank you so much for sharing. Congratulations. I love so much that your kids still talk about, remember how they took, she brought us downstairs. Like, oh, so awesome. I'm so happy for all of you and congrats again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.